ends, the faithful are flocking to the shrine of Imam Musa Kazim, peace upon him, in Kazimain, north of Baghdad, in millions to pay homage. It will not be out of context to cite a passage from Imam Musa Kazim's lengthy sermon to his disciple, the master theologian Hisham ibn Hakam, regarding God-given wisdom and authority. O Hisham, the commander of the faithful Imam Ali, peace upon him, used to say, "No one should sit in the forefront of a session except those who can answer when they are questioned, speak when others cannot, and have the most satisfying opinion. He who does not enjoy these three characters and allows himself to sit in the forefront of a session is surely idiot." These are mind-stimulating words indeed. The passage that you heard instantly turns our attention towards not only the Mosque of Kufa, where Imam Ali, peace upon him, the Prophet's divinely designated vicegerent, used to enlighten minds and souls, but also towards the fate of those in history who ended up becoming eternally damned idiots by making the fatal mistake of usurping the caliphate and sitting in the place of the Ahlul Bayt. Thus, Imam Musa Kazim, peace upon him, as an heir of the Almighty's last and greatest prophet, spared no efforts to spread the truth, even if it meant speaking directly to a tyrannically murderous caliph, such as Harun, who longed for lasting glory, but ended up in the bowels of hell with no sign on earth of his rotten grave, while his victim reigns supreme from Baghdad, where the Shia and Sunni Muslims alike salute at the site of the seventh Imam's shrine with the words, "Ya Bab al-Hawa'ij," or "O Gateway of Boons." His manners were impeccable. Never was he heard speaking roughly or harshly to anyone. Even in the most unpleasant situations, he was seen smiling and bearing the pain gracefully. This was in accordance with the saying of his ancestor Imam Ali, peace upon him, that the faithful keeps his grief confined in his heart while a smile on his face. It is an irony of Islamic history that such a noble person was harassed, imprisoned, and martyred. Here is another passage from the ziyarat of Imam Musa Kazim, peace upon him, as food for thought. "I bear witness that you carried and delivered that for which Allah has commissioned you, protected that which was entrusted to you, prescribed that which Allah has made lawful, forbade that which Allah has made unlawful, made clear the divine rules, studied and interpreted the book of Allah, exercised self-control for the sake of Allah, strived in the cause of Allah, leaving no stone unturned till the inevitable came unto you. I have taken refuge near your grave. Your zari is my sanctuary. You are my advocate before Allah. I am a friend of your friends. I am averse to your enemies, well acquainted with your rank and the guidance you adhere to, mindful of the depravity of your opponents and of the waywardness in which they are wandering."
is Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRB English Radio. This is Back to Reality. I am Asma. I have the pleasure to be your host. And here with me, I have two very dear guests, Sister Bita and Brother Muzaffar. Both of you, welcome to Back to Reality.
Assalamualaikum.
My pleasure to be here.
Of course, the pleasure is all in here. Brother Muzaffar, shall we start with you? Please introduce yourself briefly, very much, what you study and...
I'm Muzaffar Haider from the UK. I've studied English literature and now I'm in the Hawza, in the Islamic Seminary.
That's very good. It's a pleasure to have you in here and wish you luck with your studies. You, Sister Bita.
Yes, I'm at your service. I'm Bita and I study medicine at one of the University of Tehran in Iran.
Undoubtedly, after the coronavirus pandemic, every single one of us has been through too much.
Yeah.
Our lives changed, our point of view, the perspectives that we used to have of life, everything changed. And I don't know if it's in a more tragic way or in a better way. We are more optimist or we are more pessimist. Which one it is, I am not sure. Because if it's about me, then I would say we have turned to be more pessimist. Isn't it?
You.
Oh, I am. Definitely. I'm more pessimistic now.
So you aren't. It didn't have an effect on you.
No, no. I was pessimistic before. And then after the thing, I'm even more pessimistic.
I like it now. And yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, I think it was a really hard time for everyone here.
Yeah.
And, you know, unfortunately, most of the people lost the beloved persons of their families.
Yeah.
I didn't, fortunately, but I feel actually really sorry.
But we heard about other people,
exactly.
You know,
really
our neighbors, many of them.
You know, the death of people, when you went through the, I don't know, street, every house had a black card on themselves. Like, you know, they were mourning for...
That was so sad.
Yeah, it was. But the most difficult, actually, obstacle in this duration of COVID-19 pandemic for me was being virtual. We had to study in
the virtual life, schooling.
It was a pain in the neck.
Yeah.
It was. You know, we had to, I don't know, study virtually, go to the classes virtually, do everything virtually. And this losing the connection
with the real world.
With the real world was a big pain for me.
Yeah. Mm.
Especially, I had the universal entrance examination.
That was even
exactly
worse.
Exactly the 3 years of my life was so dark.
So, brother, you know, it has changed many things in a way that I sometimes have this horror that maybe a new one is going to come. I don't feel like it's finished, you know? I don't feel like it's finished.
Well, I don't like thinking about that, but I have heard that this was just a test, and after this, they're going to release the real bad one.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
because
my God.
The aim of these groups... The aim of these groups has always been population control and population reduction. If you look at people like Bill Gates, for example,
yeah.
I mean, we actually did a series of videos covering how he talks about this before the pandemic even began. And we said that, look, this person who is absolutely rich and he owns the pharmaceutical companies and stuff, he's been talking about reducing the population of humanity.
Well, that's so cruel.
Now, coronavirus did not accomplish that at all. So that's why some people are saying that it's just a test and they wanted to see how well the human beings would react to a global pandemic.
In order to do something, to create something that is even worse.
The next time they're going to do it much, much worse. And that's going to be the one that wipes out. That's just what people say. You know, they might fail. If we act appropriately, maybe they'll fail.
Irish, you know, but this is so cruel, I think, reducing the population because we need all of the people here. You know, you are not in a place to judge other people.
Yeah, you know? And to decide when is the time for them
exactly.
to leave.
And I think when you cannot recognize your power and control your power and you think you are the god of this world, this will happen, of course. But let's talk about these changes.
Mm-hmm.
What was the most touchable change you've gone through in these years? Appreciate other people was the most important thing. Because we are apart from our relatives, our friends, and so on. We felt the value of them.
It just crossed my mind. Yes, very true. Yeah. Seize the moment.
Exactly.
Yeah. In past, I used to be thinking about the future too much. But right now, I'm more clinging on right now. Right.
This is nice.
Just the present.
Yeah.
You know what happens when you see too much of death around you? You just come to realize that this life is not so worthy as we think of it to be. And then this is not going to be eternal.
Exactly.
Mm. It's going to, and it's more tangible. Awesome. We would understand that this really is going to happen to me as well. And these dear ones that you have around you, these are not going to be there forever. And since we're getting so tragic, let's just go for a short break.
Let's go.
So yeah, we're talking about the pandemic and what happened to us after the pandemic and what is going to happen to us in the next pandemics.
Yeah.
And
hold on. Let me change the atmosphere here, okay? It's gone a bit too dark.
Yeah.
Let me just say this, all right? I love the pandemic.
How come?
I'm kind of an introvert, okay? I had to stay indoors. Love it. I had to do everything virtually. Love
it. You know, I'm the same, but yes, when you are forced, it's not good.
No, I don't mind. I get to order everything online. I don't need to go out to the shops and be bothered by. Mm-hmm. I don't need to see anybody. It was lovely. Lovely.
It wasn't.
So you can't even go out.
It was so much fun. Yeah, some people died and that was really sad. And yeah, definitely. If you lose somebody, it's horrible. But you know, they've gone to a better place.
Thank you for your...
Thank you. Now so. It's no longer dark.
Yeah.
The thing. There you go.
It is coming.
Are your spirits a bit higher now? Yeah,
you've
got to look at the bright side of it. The thing that aggravated me the most and changed me the most was people. The way people reacted to the pandemic, I feel, revealed the stupidity of humanity.
How they reacted to it.
Exactly.
To show, did you see in their reaction to feel that they were stupid?
Yeah, first of all, you had the group who were just panicking. Mm-hmm. They were afraid of everything. Oh my God. And those were the people who the virus got.
Everybody was like that at first.
At first everyone was.
I wasn't scared at all.
You're not a monster or something. You're a human.
Do you feel fear at all?
No, I was scared when I saw other people getting scared.
Oh, so you mean there's no stimulus in this world to make you scared?
No, how do you learn fears, like irrational fears to begin with, right? You see your parents getting scared of a snake and then you get scared of it yourself. That's how you learn to fear
things. No, I see it myself in a field, then I get scared of it. Then I understand that a snake is something scary.
Yeah, I mean, corona was scary-ish. Yeah, I mean, it's like a cold and temperature, a flu.
Flu, a bad flu. Used to get before anyway,
you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't that bad. I'm saying the people who got more scared, they were the ones whose immune systems seemed to not be able to deal with
the
virus.
Of course, yes. Yeah.
So there were the fears. Then there were those people who came along and said, I don't believe in masks. They just don't believe in masks suddenly. They see doctors wearing masks when they're performing surgeries. They would have worn masks before the pandemic if they had even a little cold. But now suddenly they feel like they have to rebel against masks.
I was really cruel.
Then you had the group of people who were literally running around raving lunatic in the streets and spitting on other people and saying that the virus doesn't exist at all.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah,
those?
This one.
Yeah.
This one was so bad.
It's all a conspiracy. The virus doesn't exist at all.
Oh, how could you ignore it?
All these people are dying.
Then you had the other group. Well, they were saying that all the statistics are being forged and et cetera, and that the pharmaceutical companies and Bill Gates are wanting to kill us. And they were right in one sense, but to deny the virus exists at all is just ridiculous. Then you had the other people who were like, whatever my government tells me, I will do. Full stop. You had like my relatives in the UK and others in Canada and stuff. Oh, you wanna put a vaccine inside me? Go ahead. I'll take the second one. I'll take the third one. I'll take the fourth one. I'll take the fifth one. Now they're on the fifth one. And these guys are literally, they're having strokes and dying, not from the virus, but
from the vaccination.
From the vaccinations. Yeah. They're not even vaccinations. God knows what it is. And back then when we were telling them, look, don't trust these vaccines, they were like, oh, you people, you backward Islamic people with your herbal medicine. medicine. I'm like, no, I'm not saying it from that perspective. Oh, then you had the herbal medicine guys.
Yeah, exactly.
It was like that.
And you should include Trump in that group, right? Trump is, what was that drug he was saying? He said bleach at one point. And some people in America actually took bleach. They drank bleach and had to go to hospital because of it.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about a handful of people, like hundreds.
Yeah.
Then you had the people who were saying, you know, these herbal stupidity, all of it. See, the stupidity of humanity just suddenly came to the surface.
Mm-hmm. And so different reactions.
Selfishness,
yeah.
People had the common sense that, okay, I've got a bit of a cold. I'm not going to come into work today. I don't want to spread my germs everywhere. But when it came to coronavirus, no, we have to be strong. Give me a hug. Like, no, I don't want to give you a hug.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was just complete stupidity. That's what has changed in me. But, you know, أكثرهم لا تعقلون. Most of them just don't contemplate. I actually believe what Allah said now.
But I think pandemic had a special effect on the people who worked in hospitals, especially.
Yeah.
You know, the medical service was, you know, under a very heavy responsibility here in burden. Yeah. And, you know, they were sacrificing themselves.
When I saw all those doctors and all those patients and the hospitals and the situation, everyone was in sort of a turmoil. I just remembered all the novels that I've read, and in all of them there was a plague, and then everybody was so concerned about what's going to happen in the next turn.
Yeah.
And all those things. And then I started to say that the life in this world is always repeating itself.
Yeah, you know, it's cyclical. It's strange like that.
Yeah.
This pandemic reminded me of a book, Blindness.
Blindness.
It was like that exactly. We saw the wild nature of the human beings.
Yeah.
You know, they were really selfish. Like, okay, I'm going to survive here. And if you die, okay, that's my problem. You're going to go to a better place. As like a strategy. But, you know, it was really dark for me to see people like that. People were so obsessive with being hygiene. You know, they wanted to be clean. They used alcohol and so on, everything, even I don't know the nutritions, and it was somehow weird for me to see other people so obsessive about using alcohol, and after a time they were like, okay, so ignorant to that.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
The health organizations were saying that we can't do a lockdown. Why? Not because of the virus, but because people were committing suicide.
Come on.
Wow.
This is the West, right? It's different in the West, right?
Yeah, I know.
They said, okay, either people will die from the virus, but that will be less.
Or to suicide.
But if we lock them in their houses, they're going to die from suicide, and that will be much, much more. Mm.
But we feel
depression
too.
Because most of them, I guess, are living alone, that's why.
Living alone, I don't know. They just
not having the goal life. Yeah. You know, the fear of death. The severe fear of death they have because they feel empty about afterlife. And so
we can do nothing to these pandemics except to be prepared for the other ones to come.
But
this preparation is just to, you know, work on ourselves, have a good mental status in a way that we could cope with these calamities in a better way. And then I guess the things that we learned from it is that totally, if I want to say just the gist of what we learned, is that today is very important and life is not eternal. We're not going to live here forever. If you have the gist of the lessons that you have learned, you can add it to me as well.
Don't trust people.
Don't trust people in every single thing they say.
Yeah, just I would say follow the leader. If the next pandemic hits, I know what I'm doing. I'm going inside my house. I'm waiting to see what the leader says, and I'm just listening to it. That's it.
Yeah.
I'm not opening my ears to all these random groups again.
Yeah, of course.
Listening to what all these different people, everybody's an expert. No.
Yeah. So, sister, you in one sentence.
Yeah. Appreciate the beloved ones.
Yeah, that is very true. That one is very important.
I do agree.
Yeah, we don't know how more days we're going to have together, so we have to just appreciate this moment and to share love with everyone that is close to you and to all the human being around you.
Yeah.
So that's it. That's all the time that we have for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
يا الله يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي لدي أمار عزك
يا الله
يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي لدي أمار عزك لتصي دليلتك once
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Years of war in Syria has destabilized the region, which is still suffering from an ongoing humanitarian emergency. Millions are displaced within Syria or have fled to Turkey, which is contending with high inflation and a deepening economic crisis. The earthquake unleashed widespread damage and destruction in some of the most at-risk areas in the region. A magnitude 7.8 earthquake struck near Nurdaghi in southern Turkey around 4:17 a.m. local time on February 6th. A magnitude 7.5 earthquake followed around later that afternoon around 1 p.m. local time, along with the scores of powerful aftershocks. Thousands are injured and thousands more remain trapped in the rubble, and the chance of finding survivors gets narrower and narrower. Search and recovery operations continue with assistance from teams around the world. But freezing weather is hampering rescue efforts and making it even more difficult to access possible survivors. This catastrophe hit an already fragile region, which has been marked by decades of war in Syria and economic, humanitarian, and public health crises. Turkey is facing a profound economic crisis, with a collapsing currency and extraordinary inflation that hit around 80% last year, the highest in about 25 years. The quake-hit part of Turkey also hosts a large population of Syrian refugees. The economic crisis in Turkey has helped fuel a backlash against the approximately 3.6 million Syrian refugees in the country, who are already facing poverty, discrimination, an increase in violent attacks, and the risk of deportation. More than 2 million people in northwestern Syria are also at risk of a deadly cholera outbreak. The outbreak began in northeastern Syria, attributed to contaminated water from the Euphrates River, which people were relying on in part because of the water infrastructure destroyed by years of fighting. About 47% of people in Syria rely on unsafe drinking water, a potentially even bigger risk after the massive infrastructure damage by the earthquake. In northwest Syria, in particular, this outbreak was straining an already stretched and under-resourced health system, which will now also need to find ways to treat those injured in the earthquake. The devastation extends beyond northwest Syria, as the country as a whole has been overwhelmed by years of war and destruction. International sanctions against Syria are also deepening the economic crisis Syrians face. The country faces record and widespread poverty and food shortages. About 90% of Syrians live below the poverty line, and nearly 75% struggle to meet their most basic needs. And across the region, the crisis is still acute, as agencies and officials rush to find survivors in the rubbles and temperatures drop. The earthquake compounds catastrophe upon catastrophe in Syria and Turkey. It is likely to exacerbate those that already exist while creating new, unpredictable ones. The United Nations Secretary General says Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has agreed to open two more border crossings to facilitate relief aid delivery to the northern part of the quake-hit country, which is held by militants. Antonio Guterres announced the development after Assad approved the use of Bab al-Salam and al-Ra'i crossings, which link Turkey to northwestern Syria for outreach purposes. In line with the presidential decree, the crossings would be open for an initial period of 3 months to allow for the timely delivery of humanitarian aid. In addition to authorizing transit through the border passages, the UN chief said facilitating humanitarian access, accelerating visa approvals, and easing travel between hubs will allow more aid to go in faster. The announcement was made after the UN Security Council held a closed-door session on the humanitarian situation in Syria following the quake. The 7.8 magnitude quake that hit Turkey and neighboring Syria last Monday has so far claimed tens of thousands of lives. The biggest part of the fatalities that have been caused in Syria have occurred in the territory which is being held by Takfiri terrorist groups. The approval issued by Assad came after the UN lamented that an anti-government group, which has been designated as terrorist by the international community, was preventing aid consignments from being delivered to the quake-hit areas in the northern part of Syria. A spokesman for the UN's Humanitarian Aid Office said on Sunday that there were issues with approval by the group, which was identified as a terrorist outfit, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, or HTS. Previously, a number of captured Takfiri terrorists had confessed to close cooperation to U.S. military forces in Syria. There have also been reports of U.S. supporting Takfiri terrorists and helping them to expand across Syria. Also on Sunday, Reuters quoted an HTS source who spoke on the condition of anonymity as confirming that the terror outfit will not let in shipments from government-held parts of Syria, alleging, "We won't allow the government to take advantage of the situation to show they are helping."
Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi is set to pay an official visit to China at the invitation of his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping. The visit will deepen the China-Iran relations, as the two Asian countries have in the past showed their strong determination to boost strategic bilateral cooperation in various fields. A Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman has confirmed that the Iranian president will pay a state visit from February 14 to February 16. Raisi will be heading a high-ranking delegation, including Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian, Minister of Finance and Economic Affairs Ehsan Khandouzi, Oil Minister Javad Oji, and Governor of Iran's Central Bank Mohammad Reza Farzin. The members of the delegation would hold talks with their Chinese counterparts and sign cooperation documents in the presence of Raisi and Xi. Meeting with Iranian and Chinese business leaders and Iranian expatriates are also part of the president's itinerary. Late last year, Chinese Ambassador to Tehran Chang Hao described China and Iran as old friends and new partners, expressing his country's eagerness to enhance all-out relations with the Islamic Republic. He said that China regards the relations with Iran from a strategic viewpoint and will not back off from their resolve to promote a comprehensive and a strategic partnership with Iran, which he called a new chapter in their relations. Raisi's visit is expected to also focus on the U.S.-led Western domination of international affairs, as Beijing and Tehran have a common approach on the issue. The Iranian president's visit to China comes at a time when the world is going through numerous challenges. Nevertheless, Beijing and Tehran have many issues of common concern, such as Afghanistan, regional stability and development, climate change, energy security, and others, which the two sides are likely to put on their agenda of discussions. Relations between Tehran and Beijing go as far back as the ancient Silk Road. The ties are gaining a new momentum due to the West's attempt not only to marginalize Iran under U.S. pressure, but limit China's cooperation with Iran and thwart its economic and political influence in the Persian Gulf region. It seems the Western measures have rather pushed Tehran and Beijing into a new alliance. This can be seen in a lot of repeatedly escalated tensions between the United States and Iran over the past four decades. The U.S. has not only prevented its own firms from trading with Iran since the victory of the 1979 Islamic Revolution, but with anti-Iran sanctions also pressured its European allies to follow the same. And that helped Chinese companies move in and fill the void. Over the years, Iran and China have forged a unique partnership that is not easily viable with any other country. China is still Iran's biggest oil client, despite Washington's bid to bring the country's crude exports to a halt. Their railway had become a magnet for engineering and rolling stock firms from all around the world before U.S. sanctions in 2018 forced them to withdraw. The pullout left the Chinese with a less contested business terrain. For China, its close involvement in building Iran's manufacturing infrastructure is seen entirely in line with its mammoth One Belt, One Road initiative. Under the same milieu, the two countries signed a landmark 25-year Comprehensive Strategic Partnership Agreement in March 2021, defining the unilateral U.S. sanctions on Iran. The deal officially documents the Sino-Iranian Comprehensive Strategic Partnership announced during a visit by the Chinese president to Tehran in 2016. It sets the outlines of cooperation, covering major fields ranging from oil and mining to industry, transportation, and agriculture. Both countries have had tense relations with the United States and have sought to project themselves alongside Russia as a counterweight to American power play. The U.S. animosity has also played a key role in bringing Moscow and Beijing together. At this moment, what seems to be of a high urgency for Iran, China, and Russia is to create a united front that could not only serve their national interests, but help bring international peace and stability and protect those countries that are fed with the U.S.-led Western pressure and bullying.
The Russia-Ukraine war is about to enter its first anniversary within days. So far, thousands of people have been killed and many more displaced. Now, after nearly 1 year, the war has turned into a bigger conflict, an encounter, rather, between the West and Russia. Many countries, including the U.S., Germany, France, and the U.K., have been fanning the flames of the conflict by sending military aids worth billions of dollars. In the U.S., there has been a long debate among politicians on whether to support Kiev in its war with Russia. Some back the U.S. support for Ukraine. Others, however, take a different stance. Among them is Congressman Matt Gaetz. The Republican lawmaker has introduced a bill which calls for an immediate end to U.S. military and financial support for Ukraine. The resolution also urges the warring sides to negotiate a ceasefire.
How much more for Ukraine? Is there any limit? Which billionth dollar really kicks in the door? Which red line we set will we not later cross?
Throughout the war, Gates has been critical of U.S. support for Ukraine and has previously called for an end to the policy.
I will not vote for one more dollar to Ukraine. I will not vote for one more piece of materiel to Ukraine. We are far too entangled in this conflict. I believe we have extended this conflict. And I call on the Secretary of Defense to declassify the Inspector General report on the compliance with our existing regulations regarding chain of custody with materiel going to another country.
Gates has also taken a jab at President Joe Biden. In a statement on his resolution, Gates said President Joe Biden must have forgotten his prediction from March 2022, suggesting that arming Ukraine with military equipment will escalate the conflict to World War III. He added America is in a state of managed decline, and it will exacerbate if we continue to hemorrhage taxpayer dollars toward a foreign war. We must suspend all foreign aid for the war in Ukraine and demand that all combatants in this conflict reach a peace agreement immediately. Gates' resolution has so far received 10 co-sponsors, including Andy Biggs from Arizona, Lauren Boebert from Colorado, Marjorie Taylor Greene from Georgia, Anna Paulina Luna from Florida, Thomas Massey from Kentucky, and Mary Miller from Illinois. The bill introduced by Gates notes that the U.S. has already authorized over $110 billion to spend on the war in less than a year. The resolution comes after a series of escalations of U.S. military aid, including M1 Abrams tanks. It also comes at a time when Ukraine is seeking fighter jets from the U.S. and its allies. Each escalation risks a direct clash between Russia and NATO, which could quickly spiral into a nuclear war. But where does this rising U.S. opposition to continue aid to Ukraine come from? If U.S. taxpayers knew that half the income tax dollars that they sent to the Internal Revenue Service every year was being spent on weapons, war, and war preparation, political support for such programs might significantly decline. As a matter of fact, no agency of the federal government communicates to taxpayers how Congress spends their money. Purchasing weapons and military services with taxpayer dollars has always been, and continues to be, a highly profitable endeavor for defense contractors. But it is in a real war, like as in Ukraine, that such profiteering truly thrives. President Joe Biden's budget proposal to Congress for 2023 included $813 billion for the Pentagon and military expenditures. This is more than half the income taxes citizens send to the federal government each year, and a more than $31 billion increase over the already bloated fiscal year 2022 Pentagon budget. It is also more than the defense budgets of the eight next biggest military spenders put together, including Russia, China, and India. One of the components of the $782 billion Pentagon budget is for the purchase of new nuclear-armed submarines, even though the U.S. already has 14 lethal Ohio-class submarines, each capable of launching 192 nuclear warheads. Canceling two of these unnecessary and provocative new weapon systems would save more than $10 billion. All in all, what seems to be a non-negotiable is the U.S. taxpayers' money, which could and can be allocated to other needs. What seems to be clear, not only to American taxpayers, but to the whole world, is that the U.S. military-industrial complex is the only one who benefits most from such aid.
Back in September 2022, a number of blasts occurred in the Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2 natural gas pipelines. Following the attacks, there were gas leaks around the pipelines, which were built to transport natural gas from Russia to Germany through the Baltic Sea. Both pipelines are majority owned by the Russian majority state-owned gas company Gazprom. Back then, there was much speculation about who may have been behind the sabotage act, but now a leading U.S. journalist has blamed the blast on the Washington regime. In a detailed report published in his blog, investigative journalist Seymour Hersh has claimed that the bombing of the Nord Stream underwater gas pipelines in the Baltic Sea was ordered by the White House and carried out by the CIA with the help of the U.S. Navy. Hirsch says the finding is based on his own investigation into the September sabotage. He says U.S. Navy deep-sea divers planted the high-powered C-4 explosives under the gas pipelines under the guise of NATO naval exercises. The bombs were detonated on September 26 with a remote signal sent by a sonar buoy which was dropped near the Nord Stream pipelines by a Norwegian Navy P-8 surveillance plane. The planning process began back in December 2021 when a special task force was created with the direct participation of U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan. The White House dismissed the report, but Russian officials say the published facts should become the basis for an international investigation. Russian Foreign Ministry says the United States has questions to answer over its alleged role in explosions. Earlier this month, Germany's Public Prosecutor General Peter Frank said that Berlin has no evidence linking Russia to the sabotage of the Nord Stream 1 and 2 gas pipelines. According to Hirsch, the Biden administration was focused on Nord Stream pipelines because as long as European countries like Germany remained dependent on those pipelines for cheap natural gas, they would be reluctant to give military aid to Ukraine for a war with Russia, which was looming back then. The U.S. was a major opponent of the Nord Stream pipelines. In 2019, the former U.S. President Donald Trump said that Nord Stream 2 turned Europe into a hostage of Russia and placed sanctions on any company assisting Russia to complete the pipeline. In December 2020, then-President-elect Joe Biden expressed his opposition to the opening of the new pipeline.
If Russia invades, that means tanks or troops crossing the border of Ukraine again. Then there will be no longer a Nord Stream 2. We will bring an end to it.
How will you do that exactly, since the project and control of the project is within Germany's control?
I promise you, we'll be able to do it.
Swedish and Danish investigators have already found that the ruptures were a result of sabotage, but they have not specified who was responsible. The attacks occurred in exclusive economic zones of the two European countries. The 1,200-kilometer pipelines, operated by Russian gas giant Gazprom, are not currently in operation. Since the blast occurred, Moscow has blamed the West for the damage to the infrastructure. According to reports, the decision to undermine the Nord Stream 1 and 2 was agreed upon and approved personally by the U.S. President Joe Biden, that he discussed the issue with his inner circle for more than 9 months.
Senator Cruz, like you, I am, and I think the administration is very gratified to know that Nord Stream 2 is now, as you like to say, a hunk of metal at the bottom of the sea.
The Russian government described the sabotage as a terrorist attack and said that the U.S. was the nation that benefited most from it by speeding up Europe's attempts to wean itself off Russian gas.
بسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
وعجل فرجه. السلام عليكم respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners of IRB English Radio. Welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRAB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International School Network. So here we are with some of the students of Sevier International School, Brother Hussein Ruhullah, Ali Nasir, and Hassan Nasrullah. Welcome to your brothers. How are you, Ali Nasir?
Alhamdulillah, sir.
Okay, good. How about Hassan?
Alhamdulillah, sir. How are you?
Okay, welcome, everyone. Thank you so much. In this session, inshallah, we'll talk about Ayah 280 and 281 of Surah Al-Baqarah. Brothers and sisters, please Stay with us till the end of this session. Inshallah, we'll mention some important points about these two verses. And also, we'll mention the important tajweed rules. Everyone, let's first listen to the recitation of these two verses, okay?
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وإن كان ذو عسرة فنظرة إلى ميسرة وأن تصدقوا خير لكم إن كنتم تعلمون واتقوا يوما ترجعون فيه إلى الله ثم توفى كل نفس ما كسبت وهم لا يظلمون.
Nice one. I will recite once Hassan, Hussein and Ali Nasir. Please listen and repeat our brothers and sisters as well, inshallah, will repeat after us. Ready?
Yes.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
وإن كان ذو عسرة فنظرة إلى ميسرة
وإن كان ذو عسرة فنظرة إلى ميسرة
وأن تصدقوا خير لكم إن كنتم تعلمون
وَأَن تَصَدَّقُوا خَيْرٌ لَكُمْ إِن كُنتُمْ تَعْلَمُونَ
وَاتَّقُوا يَوْمًا تُرْجَعُونَ فِيهِ إِلَى اللَّهِ
وَاتَّقُوا يَوْمًا تُرْجَعُونَ فِيهِ إِلَى اللَّهِ
ثم توفى كل نفس ما كسبت وهم لا يظلمون
ثم توفى كل نفس ما كسبت وهم لا يظلمون
أحسنتم ما شاء الله Thank you so much Allah bless you inshallah وإن كان ذو عسرة فَنَظِرَةٌ إِلَى مَيْسَرَةٌ Sometimes we may lend someone some money, yes? Like we talked in the sessions before, yes? We might pay them some money on loan and we might ask them so soon, come on, you got to give me my money back. Yeah? You paid him like 100,000 tomans and you ask him, okay, come on, give me my... Come on, give my money back, okay? I need it.
Yes.
So he might not have it at that time. For example, you were supposed to... he was supposed to return it back to you like a month later. So you're asking him to give you back like 10 days later, okay? It's not okay, yes? It's not fair.
Yeah.
And also, this is not what Aya talked about. It. This example I said, okay? Like 10 days after. No, for example, Aya says this one. That if you, he was supposed, for example, if he was supposed to return the money back like a month later, so after a month, if he didn't return, go to him, okay, and ask him to give you your money back. If he couldn't give you, like one, there are two cases, okay? First, he does not really give you the money. He has the money and he does not give you back. Here, okay, you have to force him to give you back the money.
Yes.
If he didn't, go to the jury, okay? Ask the government, okay, to get your money back. All right?
Yeah.
This is first case. Second case, because that's your right, okay? If he, intentionally, if he does not give your money back. But if he doesn't have, if he's still poor, okay, he's needy, he doesn't have cash or anything in his account, so it's better not to force him, okay? Give him time. Like he says, oh, I'll pay it like after a week. So give him time. So Allah Almighty says, وَإِنْ كَانَ ذُو عُسْرَةٍ, if he didn't have anything, if he was still having nothing, okay, couldn't pay you, فَنَظِرَةٌ إِلَى مَيْسَرَةٍ, give him some time till he gets money and give you, okay? And Allah Almighty says something better than this. Allah Almighty says, if you like give him time, it's very good, okay? But if you give him, like, if you do this one, it's so much better. وَأَن تَصَدَّقُوا خَيْرٌ لَكُمْ, if you could forgive him, if you could forgive him and give him as a charity, alms, okay? It's better. It's better for you. Sometimes, yeah, of course, we have a lot of money he has to return back. Yeah, it might be very difficult for us to forgive, yes?
Yes.
But like less than 10,000 tumans, yes, you can forgive. Your classmate, your friend, your brother, okay? إِن كُنْتُمْ تَعْلَمُونَ, if you knew, if you like forgive him, if you knew about what you will get in return from Allah Almighty, you would for sure do it. So, then Allah Almighty says, وَاتَّقُوا يَوْمًا تُرْجَعُونَ فِيهِ إِلَى اللَّهِ, you have to fear Allah Almighty of the day that you will be raised, okay? The day of judgment. Allah Almighty will give you the reward if you forgive him or if you give him time. This way. ثُمَّ تُوَفَّى كُلُّ نَفْسٍ مَا كَسَبَتْ وَهُمْ لَا يُظْلَمُونَ, everybody gets whatever he had done. If he was doing great, he will get good things, reward. If he was bad, like doing bad deeds, he will get punished, okay? وَهُمْ لَا يُظْلَمُونَ, they will not be, yes, oppressed, okay?
Yeah.
They will not suffer any loss. That's it. Allah Almighty is just. So, we mentioned some important points here. And I hope, inshallah, you've learned something, but for sure, I want you to refer to the Tafasir book, inshallah, interpretations.
هذا القرآن يوحدنا لطريق الخير يوجهنا الله تعالى أنزله ورسول الله معلمنا ورسول الله معلمنا هذا القرآن.
Want to learn Quran at home? Join us in our Quranic class. Let's recite the Quran.
Now we will move on with the Tajweed rules. Some important points we will mention. وَإِن كَانَ ذُو عُسْرَةٍ, the rule إِخْفَى must be here applied. وَإِن كَانَ, نُون ساكن plus كَاف. وَإِن كَانَ, hide the sound of noon and let your reader understand that the letter kaf comes after it. Wa-ink, right? Wa-ink-ana, hide the sound of noon, let a nasal sound come out, okay? Wa-ink-ana, dhu, pronunciation of the letter dhal must be pronounced from its exact articulation point. Yeah? Dhu, dhu, not zu, dhu.
Okay.
Usratin, usain, ra. Usratin, ta has a tanween, and next letter is fa.
Ikhfa.
The rule ikhfa is applied. Usratin, tin, nasal sound, hide the sound of noon, produce a nasal sound. Usratin, fa, na, zi, ra, tun. Fa, na, zi, ra, tun. Right?
Yes. Zi,
Ratun, ziratun, ila maysara. Tun has a tanween, plus next word starts with hamza. Izhar is applied, right? Fana ziratun ila maysara. Sa, ra, ra, ra has a heavy sound. Tafkhimur ra. Hussein?
Yes.
Jim indicates what?
It's jais.
It is jais to stop or continue.
Yes.
وَأَن تَصَدَّقُوا, نُن ساكين plus ta.
إخفاء.
إخفاء. Yeah, hide the sound. وَأَن تَصَدَّقُوا خَيْرٌ لَكُمْ. Uh-huh. Ali Nasir? خَيْرٌ لَكُمْ. Is it correct?
No.
How do I read it?
خَيْرٌ لَكُمْ.
خَيْرٌ لَكُمْ. Yeah, merge the sound. Yes. إِن كُنْتُمْ تَعْلَمُونَ, we mentioned it in the previous verses as well. It's very easy to إِخْفَى. إِن كُنْتُمْ إِخْفَى. The next ayah, the last ayah in this session. تتقوا يوما ترجعون. Is that correct?
No.
إخفاء is applied.
Yes.
وَاتَّقُوا يَوْمًا تُرْجَعُونَ. تُرْ رَا has a heavy sound. فِيهِ إِلَى اللَّهِ. What rule is applied here? With the letter lam in the word Allah.
It is, Allah is pronounced heavily.
Heavily, yes. إِلَى اللَّهِ. Right?
Yes.
Not إِلَى اللَّهِ. إِلَى اللَّهِ ثُمَّ تُوَفَّى كُلُّ نَفْسٍ كُلُّ نَفْسٍ إِدْغَام مَا كَسَبَتْ وَهُمْ لَا يُظْلَمُونَ يُظْلَمُونَ heavy sound. That's all, brothers and sisters. Now we have understood, we have learned the tajweed rules. Let's everyone listen once again. This time we know the tajweed rules, inshallah, okay? We will listen.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. وَإِن كَانَ ذُو عُسْرَةٍ فَنَظِرَةٌ إِلَى مَيْسَرَةٍ وَأَن تَصَدَّقُوا خَيْرٌ لَكُمْ إِن كُنتُمْ تَعْلَمُونَ وَاتَّقُوا يَوْمًا تُرْجَعُونَ فِيهِ إِلَى اللَّهِ ثُمَّ تُوَفَّى كُلُّ نَفْسٍ مَا كَسَبَتْ وَهُمْ لَا يُظْلَمُونَ
Alhamdulillah. Nice one. I hope you have understood something from this session, inshallah, brothers and sisters. I hope this session was beneficial to you. We'll be here with you, okay, in the coming sessions in IRIB English Radio. Please stay with us. Thank you so much. Thanks to IRIB English Radio. Thanks to Sevier International School. And yes. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadi wa alihi al-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil farajahum.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools. ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان
IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines this hour. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi says Tehran is